Hello, good morning, good evening, and or good night, whatever time you're listening to this. Welcome to the latest episode of Darren Matthews and Sometimes Friends.
Sometimes friends, sometimes friends.
That is a clever title because it means that if I ever don't line up someone to interview, I just record one myself.
When you have an enemy on.
When I have an enemy on.
Or a recently diagnosed enemy.
A frenemy.
Is diagnosed the right term for that? A recently diagnosed enemy? Well, I suppose they are leechers, aren't they?
Someone who we've now decided is a bollocks.
Yeah.
Cool. I am joined today with a recently diagnosed enemy. if you're looking for him on the old social media, it's Sir Steve O'Timothy.
Yeah, on everything, basically.
On everything. Or as he's better known, which is a weird thing to say, because that's how you would talk about somebody with schizophrenia.
Yeah.
Farmer Michael.
Hello.
How are you doing?
Nice to be on the show.
Okay, we should address this first of all, of course, because you're a real person who plays a character.
Yeah.
Who's based on loads of real people.
That goes above some people sometimes, and it's quite disturbing that people think I'm real and come over to the car and get actually kind of aggressive that I don't talk like that in real life and go like, wait a minute, is this like just a lie or what? Like, you're only pretending. Or it's even worse when they think I do impressions. So they do a Conor McGregor impression. I go, I don't do impressions. Do the farmer impression. I go, it's not an impression. He doesn't exist. Like,
yeah, it's a character.
I'd be doing an impression of my own character, you know, which is me doing the character.
Okay.
So take a snap and just leave me alone.
Yeah. So I have already interviewed the straight man of the comedy duo.
Oh, what a
that
bitch
is Michael and August Kathleen.
Oh, I hate you now. I can't stand her.
Ah, that's not nice now.
She knows I love her. She knows I love her.
I know. So I had a chat with Sinead about the live aspect in the tour. So I want to talk to you more kind of about the characterization.
Yeah.
First of all, you guys have been doing this for a couple of years now.
4 years.
But the initial one, is this sort of a wee bit like Wizard of Oz? Is this we're showing you behind the curtain kind of thing?
Yeah.
Are you okay with that? Like,
yeah.
I don't think anyone's like going to stop believing in Michael if we...
Don't stop believing.
Like when we find out Santa's not really...
Yeah. Well, some people will never get it anyway. The majority of like viewers on YouTube. I start getting unsubscribers when I do anything that's realistic.
Okay.
Or when I show videos of me on stage. Because they're like, wait a minute. What? And they're like, fuck this asshole. You know, and they just unsubscribe. So it's...
Okay, number one thing. Where did Michael come from?
Michael came... He's basically...
Well, Galway, but...
Yeah, he's basically an amalgamation of like my friend's dad, uncles of mine, etc. Just like kind of local people I would have grown up with around the area, and especially my dad's from Roscommon and my mother's from Mayo, so it would have been just a kind of a melding of all those characters into one character. That was the initial one because he was very, very West of Ireland orientated at the beginning. And he didn't talk about topical comments. He just talked about very, very cliched farming things. So that's how it became Farmer Michael. But it was initially Farmer Martin. When I first done it with my brother, I was just bored on him at tits one night in the car. And I said, run and record me. I'm going to do a few videos for the crack. Just like doing the farmer character. So I used to do raps in my like school and in college and things. I'd do raps as a farmer. I'd just go like, go shot it is your birthday, we're going to pat it like it is your birthday, we're going to bite your the mayor down because it's your birthday, and you know, we don't get things like that, and everyone would laugh. So it was like, yeah, this is kind of, it's funny.
So the initial character came from the idea of when in the context of we'll do it in the context of people from Ireland, especially the west of Ireland. So you are a townie of country stock.
Yeah.
So you had
the
best and obviously the worst of both worlds.
Yeah, and half Mayo as well to
just, in Galway.
Yeah.
That's,
yeah,
oh my God, yeah. That's like being
so
a
So I kept that African. Hidden because like obviously the Galway GA, you know, rivalry.
Yeah.
And you'd have to like, you know, do videos pulling the piss out of Mayo. So I kept it hidden that my mother was from Mayo just in case anyone, you know.
Big admittance.
Yeah.
This is a hard hitting podcast we're getting.
Half Roscommon as well too though, so.
Yeah.
You know.
We're getting to the dirty, dirty truth.
Yeah. I'm a horrible half-breed blow-in.
Right. So how then, obviously, with your folks being country folk, how did you end up, you're from the west end of Galway?
West side of Galway.
West side,
the
sorry.
West end is Claddagh, so that's a different...
Grand. The west life of Galway.
Yeah. Boys life, as they're called now, or whatever. Yeah, so my dad came to work in 71, 73 or something. And they lived in the old notorious Rahun Flats.
Okay, I've heard of them, actually.
Which people would have heard of back in the days. Yeah, they were... a rough spot. There were I'd say the like Galway's version of fucking Ballymun, more
Grand.
or less.
Or
But it was nice in them days.
Yeah.
People had nothing but good to say about it. And then my dad was working on digital, and then obviously that closed and so on. And but yeah, then I came along on Christmas Day, 1981.
Christmas Day.
Yeah, we just moved. They just moved from the flats to Gail Carrig Park in Westside, so across the road, basically.
Okay.
Into the new housing estate, magical new housing estate with beautiful houses, and 20 years later became the capital of joyriding in Ireland. But anyways, enough said about that. So yeah, basically that's my life story and how I ended up.
Yeah, no, I was always wondering sort of how, like, the tiny aspect of you being from Galway City, but you still had that understanding because
But most of the kids I grew up with, most of the people I hung around, my friends, they were like, most of theirs, like, dad was from, like, Offaly or something, or their mother from Mayo or something. So it was kind of, it was a common thing, I think, around that time.
Like a very small, like, sort of economic migrants, but on a smaller scale.
Yeah. Fleeing the great Mayo Civil War.
Yeah.
Checkpoint Charles.
I was thinking more of, oh my God. So that's where Michael comes from.
Because
I think one of the great identifiers, and Sinead mentioned as well, she was like, it's so weird because Michael, as we would say, is a characterization of maybe what people think of that, you know, old racist, ignorant kind of Irish guy.
Yeah.
But we all know one.
Yeah. And he's lovable too. Like.
It's weird.
Yeah. He's actually a nice enough person, but he's just ignorantly so, insert everything, homophobic, racist, xenophobic, just everything.
Because I've explained this when I travel, I'm like, Irish people aren't racist. We're not smart enough to be racist.
We're
ignorant.
Yeah. And there's a big fucking difference. Like, yeah, we're not going around like, you know, college educated racism, you know.
But now in Ireland that we actually have racism, we're confused by it.
Yeah. Should I have nothing against the blacks at all?
Yeah, you're like, you know, why that is he kind being of thing. Mean? Like,
yeah. I've nothing against the coloureds, and you're like, oh my God, did you just say that? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I've nothing against the queers, and you're like, oh, fucking hell.
Yeah. I feel like in that aspect, Michael there's parts of that where it reminds me of my own dad.
Yeah.
Because I know there's no harm in him, but he says, if you want to be a poofter, I'm like, oh, well, that's
not the words. Yeah. As long as they're not, as Paul said one day, he was listening to a man in Ballinrobe or something in a pub, and he was talking about gay marriage, and he goes, well, I've nothing in it now, but as long as they're not let hire children.
Okay,
that was his term for adoption. As long as the gays aren't allowed hire children. And you're like, for fuck's sake,
oh, this is what we're dealing with.
It's trying to be anti something but being so that it catches you off guard and you don't know what to say to it.
Previous to Michael though, Sinead was saying as well, so you'd done stand up,
yeah,
and you had done other sketches and other characters, and
not previous to Michael, all after.
Was stand up first or Michael?
Michael was first
then
I got into
context.
Doing stand up of just me,
okay,
just my own show with nothing got to do with Michael or anything, but then people that were coming were expecting to see Michael
because they'd seen the videos,
yeah. So they were very disappointed, and I got a lot of feedback like, oh, you were funny enough, but you thought there'd be a bit of Michael thrown in and stuff. So I said, like, yeah, fuck it, let's do it. So Johnny Graham, obviously, you know, Johnny, he basically forced me onto stage one night, but it was on my own doing Michael. So I was trying to, Kathleen was kind of the audience, if you get me. But it did, like, it worked and they liked it, but I was like, why? Sinead needs to be here. Kathleen needs to be up here.
We think I can do this better.
Yeah. If I have that few minutes of thought in between, because it was mostly ad-libbed, so it was kind of like, if Sinead is there, it gives me that few minutes to come up with something. You know what I mean? At the beginning, like.
What I noticed with Sinead as well, whenever you guys are, so it's not quite, it's the duo aspect of the straight man and the funny man.
Yeah.
But I've noticed as well, I feel like Kathleen's part in the videos versus the live show, Kathleen as a character, I think, has matured way more in the live show, and it's so weird because Sinead is not the 60-year-old wee woman we're expecting.
Yeah.
She's more like Sinead that we know.
Yeah, she's more like a modern TV presenter interviewer, whereas in the car she's a subdued.
She's long suffering.
Yeah. Because that didn't really carry over on stage. It ended up people feeling more pity for her and thinking I'm a horrible bastard.
Yeah.
In real life. So I was like, okay, we do this. And she, like, Sinead, like a lot of people, like even when we were in Glasgow and Sinead was telling you the story, like, she's not funny. She plays the straight man. That's the whole idea of it.
Yeah.
Like, Sinead is the funniest person. Like, in real life, Sinead is the funniest, like, out of all of my friends. Like, she's fucking hilarious. You know what I mean? When she gets going, and, like, it kind of, it takes me back sometimes when people say that, and you're like, no, she, or like, you should be just doing it on your own. You don't need Kathleen. You're like, it doesn't work without her. Like, it's a completely misnomer. Like, you know.
But what I notice more so in the live show is that Kathleen is the character, or whether it's Sinead as the performer, she's got some, like, she's, there's way more feedback from her. She'll jump in, she'll add on, there's callbacks.
Yeah. She takes charge.
She's leading the show.
And she controls me.
Yeah.
Because Michael, like, as you know, when I get into Michael mode, like, I could just, like, someone could shout up something from the audience and I could easily go off in a 25-minute rant about that thing. So Kathleen, like, calls me back and puts me in my place, you know what I mean? And it's kind of like, there's a show to be done.
Keeps you inside the material.
Yeah. Getting back to, like she always says, getting back to Michael we were talking about, you know. So she reels me in more or less. Like,
yeah, so...
And stops me crossing that line, which people think I always do. And I find it fascinating when people go, like, oh, it's very controversial. It's not. It's not a bit controversial what I do. Like, I don't find it controversial at all. I'm parodying a horrible character. But I'm using the character to highlight and make fun of people that are like Michael.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But people often don't get that and think, like, Jesus is awful controversial because he says the C word. And you're like, yeah, but I am a cripple. Little joke there, Darren.
I know. I'm letting you go.
Yeah.
So getting back to what we're talking about.
Come on, Michael.
No, I know. I think it's good as well because, as you say, like, what we have for the live shows, chat with Sinead, and she said in the context of the show, which is a theatre show.
Yeah.
It's quite strange because it's how it sets up.
Yeah.
It's different to a comedy club. It's different to a one-man show. It's the context. So I said, why did you then decide to make it a theatre show? Why bring support acts? So you're going from a 2 to 3 minute YouTube video to,
yeah,
here's an hour and a half, here's two hours. And Sinead says, to be honest, when we started, we were like, oh my God, can we do this for 10 minutes?
Yeah.
So you bring a couple of your mates and then we'll stretch it to half an hour. Remember, and she says, now there's just reams of stuff.
Yeah, I remember Adam Burke, like, he brought us up to the Bray Comedy Festival and it was our first time doing the festival. And he goes, like, yeah, you'll be on before, oh, who was it from Northern Ireland? I think it was Paddy, actually. Yeah, it was Paddy at the time. Paddy McDonald, yeah. And Adam goes, you're right, 10. Nice tight 10. And we were like, yeah, it's cool. And myself and Sinead were absolutely panicking, like,
yeah,
backstage, just going, can we fucking do 10? You know what I mean? Like, can we get 10 out of this? And we ended up on like 9:52 or something. He goes, fucking great timing, like, Adam. And we were like, yeah, of course it was.
Yeah.
We ran out of stuff. You know what I mean?
Yeah, to that, for that context now, we're, as I said to Sinead, we have to sometimes give you like a flash of the light to be like, they're gonna find us, get off.
And it's nice when Sinead would go, we didn't even do the insert ABC bit D.
Yeah, great.
It's like, cool. You know what I mean? But I suppose with the bigger the crowd, the less you need to kind of fall back on your fallback material, because you're given so much and you will drive on so much and just go off the cuff so much and just kind of drag things out of the crowd, or someone will be wearing a jersey and, like, as you know, like, I'll just go off in a rant for 5 minutes about that, or, you know what I mean, and try and crack in a joke in between the rants. But people find the rants funny anyway, like when I start accusing people of things, like the last day when I came up with the, like, potato Snapchat thing.
Yeah,
it's just totally off the cuff, and it's like, that's staying in because of Brexit, you know what I mean? I have to, like,
would you be worried, obviously because you guys have built such a dynamic being on stage and knowing each other off stage, would you be worried having to do it with someone else? Like, the dynamic just would be completely different. But you need Sinead to be quick enough to go, that's the pinnacle of the joke, stop.
Yeah, and interrupt you,
because, and then once you get the big laugh, you know to come out.
Yeah, because if it drowns out, it doesn't really work. She has to intervene, basically, and then if that doesn't get a laugh, then I'll pop in a little quip afterwards or whatever, and that kind of get them going again, or just, like, move on swiftly to something else, or let it die and wallow in the death of it.
Yeah.
To make it funny, look away and kind of, you know, that didn't go down well, Kathleen. You know, that thing, and that always gets a laugh anyway. So you're going to get some sort of a reaction, and that's the goal, you know what I mean? So.
Yeah, and unlike doing straight stand-up, you have that, I don't want to say safety net, I want to say a more qualified person.
Yeah.
To go, move on, continue, stop.
It's sometimes nice to wallow in the death.
Yeah.
You know, it is. It's especially as a character, you have that protection as well.
Yeah.
You have the mask of Michael.
Mannerisms get a laugh.
Yeah.
Action gets a laugh.
Yeah, because like I could be backstage and I could be really, really panicky. Like the last time we done the Southport Comedy Festival, I was an hour in the car, like violently shaking. And we were about to go on in 5 minutes and I couldn't walk because my legs were so shaky. So the boys got the wheelchair ready. Paul put it together. Johnny broke the top off a table, got gaffer tape, and to make a wheelchair ramp to get me on the stage. And I was just like this backstage, and Sinead pushed me on. And then about 15 seconds, then the panic is gone. I'm in Michael,
yeah. And
I'm rolling, and it's cool, and everything's perfect. You know, like, and it's always that, it's the apprehension. Like, it's the apprehension, because I suppose Sinead is there, and she's integral, but I'm the kind of face of it, so I'll always get the flack if shit goes wrong.
Yeah.
And the pressure is always on me, more so than anyone else, to make sure the lads are paid and make sure the venue gets paid and make sure everything goes smoothly and come up with the, you know, answers to queries and complaints and things. So it kind of all falls back on me. So I suppose at the end of the day, I'm always thinking, like, if this goes wrong, I get the shit for it.
Yeah.
Well, so that adds the extra pressure. Like,
we've always talked about you guys, because you obviously built it from nothing, from a few Facebook videos, and now you're doing live tours. I mean, would you be afraid? I'm sure, look, life would be a lot easier if you could just rock up to a venue and somebody went, there's the stage, and you're good to go.
Yeah.
If someone else was taking care of it. But would you worry you would lose that creative control? Or you would be worried, you're like, why am I here?
I'm a control freak completely. Like, even MPI now are organising our tour for 2020. And we just got the dates yesterday and the venues. And it's like, I wasn't in touch with the person that runs the venue.
What's the venue like?
Yeah, you know, I don't know anything about it, and I didn't like source it myself. And you know, I like to know everything about it and kind of know the person, and you know, so I think, but it allows us as well to kind of get rid of that worry, but also creates its own worries, I suppose, you know, because a lot of the gigs are in January, and it's like, is that too early? Will we sell the tickets? Oh my god! And you're just like freaking out about that. So
folks, if you're looking at anything to get your friends, family and loved ones for Christmas time, and you live in Ireland, live shows are a great...
They are. Support live comedy, as everyone says.
Support live comedy, as we like
to
say, yeah. So, yeah, that's... So,
instead of dead comedy.
Is that a wee exclusive of a new tour?
Yeah.
So this tour ends... Is London the death of this tour?
It's the death of the UK part of it.
The UK part of it.
Unless you count the north of Ireland as part of the UK, because we'll be doing 3 gigs in... Newry,
Cookstown,
Oma.
Rescheduled gigs.
Yeah. Which we got a lot of flack for.
We will talk about the rescheduled gigs in a wee bit. You mentioned there about the last time you did the comedy festival, which we're going to do tonight, which we're all really excited about and looking forward to.
Oh, it's absolutely brilliant.
After 3 years and all the stuff you've released, why are people still surprised when you come out on crutches?
I don't know. I think initially people thought Farmer Michael was real. They thought I was a real person.
Okay.
Because Kathleen had...
You thought it was like a candid...
Yeah, Kathleen had little kind of input in it, really. She just goes, so Michael, what's it? And that was it. And I'd go off on a big rant, and that fella down there, and I talk about Kathleen as if she's not there. That kind of way. So I think people thought it was real. And then after a while, when they'd see me on crutches, they thought it was part of the act. So people still think it's part of it. Because the video will always go further than me talking about my disability with.
Right.
So that won't reach as many people as a video will. So people still kind of like, oh my God, like what? Football, was it? Were you playing football or whatever? And then I roll in a wheelchair and they're going like, they kind of laugh. And some people actually don't believe that I use a wheelchair. And I'm like, I talk about this very vocally and on TV I talk about it. Like, it's like even on the Six O'Clock Show or whatever, like, oh, you used a wheelchair to get here tonight, blah, blah, blah. Can you tell us about that? So it's like, obviously we get more reach in our videos with me not talking about my disability than we get on traditional TV or when I just put up a post saying, here's me in a wheelchair.
Because Michael's just sitting in the car.
Yeah. And people go, Jesus, your legs are awful skinny. And it's like, yes, I nearly died in an accident. They don't work. Thank you for your input.
No, I just thought, because I mean, obviously, whenever I met you, I knew you were in crutches. I was like, hey, nice to meet you, man. And we sort of gigged and we didn't really reference it. The most I've been shocked by it was when we did a gig in my hometown in Newry.
After
the show, I was just chatting to you, and the guy just went up, walked up and went, what happened to your legs?
Yeah.
Like, that's...
It's straight up.
Like, that's fine.
Yeah. But...
And I was like, what the...
But see, you kind of excuse them in a way because they think it's just something small. And you almost feel complimented by that, that they don't look at you and go, oh, fuck, I shouldn't ask him. He's definitely properly crippled.
Yeah.
You know, that, Jesus, I think to myself, oh, it mustn't be that bad then. I mustn't look really, really lame, to give it a proper context. I must look like I just had a sporting injury.
Yeah.
So I kind of, it almost comforts me in a way. But anyone that, like, I've met a few people before. I remember I was out in Perks and one of the lads, Robert Perk, they used to run a fun fair, and I was walking up and he broke his neck and his back. And he got back walking again. He has a limp, but he's fairly independent. And he came up to me and he goes, spinal injury. I was like, yeah. And I said, how did you know? And he goes, I have one myself. I knew he did have one himself, but I didn't want to let on. And it's just amazing how he knew by my gait, and I knew, you know, yeah, by his gait, that, like, yeah, we're brothers. We're spinos, we are. You know what I mean? Like,
no, I just wanted to ask you in the context, because we've talked before about, obviously, whenever that happened to you, that's a completely life-changing aspect. And you were thinking, the thing that saved your life is humor.
Yeah.
And oh, absolutely. And now you're sharing the humor with people as well. Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. Like, even in the hospital, like, it was just humor that got me through it. Like, it was pulling the piss out of myself.
Is it in the context of, if you didn't laugh, you'd cry? Is that?
Oh, definitely.
Is this the basics of it?
Oh, most definitely. Absolutely. Like, I was suffering bad from depression when I decided to make the videos with my brother. Just at the crack, like a creative outlet, just to do something. Because I was finished college and I knew I wouldn't be, like, working, you know. So, because I used to paint with my dad, and that was gone out the window as soon as my accident happened, obviously. So I was just kind of doing courses and stuff and doing accountancy, and I could never imagine myself doing accountancy in my life. And
I don't think you're bored enough.
Yeah. Because even in the course, I was entertaining all the people.
Yeah.
So it was kind of like, yeah, this is what I need to be doing. And then I had the videos on my phone for a while and then threw them up on Facebook one day. And they kind of blew up, basically. So I was like, I remember then people started recognizing me, and I was like, I had to kind of step back from it for a while and think, like, is this something I want to do? Like, I wish now, looking back, I wish I started doing it when I was 16, 17, 18.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because I was always the class clown. I was always making people laugh. I was always not getting into fights because my humor would, people would not pick on me because I'd slag them and make a fool of them in front of the class.
Yeah.
So comedy was always my shield. It was always my way of doing things. But I would have never had the confidence, or I would have never had the knowledge, or where to start or where to go.
I feel like, you know, if, as you say, like, I, in school, I would have used humour a lot to deflect away from.
Yeah.
Because if you make a fool out of somebody, they look like a proper arsehole if they punch you.
Yeah. Exactly.
like you've outwitted them.
Yeah. And so that was my kind of shield, like, and I suppose after the accident then as well, it was just like, I've nothing to lose. Like, you know, I survived death. You know, I'm not afraid anymore. I can do shit like this. You know what I mean? I can pump myself out there, like, so.
With Michael in context, I chatted to Sinead about writing and how, where it comes from and how you write. But you're very, I mean, obviously when we have to do a bit about this, it becomes a topical thing. You're a topical or a commentator.
Yeah,
that's political and or otherwise.
That's how it moved on from the typical West of Ireland, just talking about very farmer things, to moving on to topical things, because people were writing under the videos. Did you see what happened in Thing? What would Michael think of that?
That was your route.
So then it was like, yes, let's get on to topical things. And then it fucking hit a new level of reach altogether. And it, you know, because people are always saying, like, it's too West of Ireland. It never, like, reached the rest of Ireland. Then it reached Dublin. Then it reached England. Then it reached America, Australia. Like, our biggest viewers are, like, UK, Ireland, Australia, South Africa. And, like when I do a live stream on Instagram or anything, like, everyone, like, just the geographical places that come in, hello from, like, Saudi Arabia and stuff, and hello from these places. And it's like, fucking hell, it's incredible.
I know. I was talking about this because you'd think, I'm like, how does this translate, or how do these people know this?
Yeah.
But then you remember that the Irish went all over the world.
Yeah.
And people.
Yeah, and not only that, but, like, it's cross cultural because everyone has that granddad or that uncle.
Yeah, I was
like,
gonna,
it's a human thing.
Yeah, I was gonna say, even if in the context, especially the Irish context of, oh, sure, my granddad moved here to Australia in 1952, and sure, he was like that all his life.
Yeah, and, like, it just ties into that whole, like, the internet age and the change in moral zeitgeist is so fast that even your uncle or your dad is way, way morally outdated already. Whereas that would have happened a slower passage of time years gone by, you know what I mean? Because we would have held on to that, you know. There was less interference, there was less knowledge to be gained and stuff, you know.
It's quite funny then, because now we're talking about a new idea out of something that's so old-fashioned.
Yeah. Repackaging
like,
old-fashioned views.
This is commentary.
Just, like, throwing them out, yeah. So I think it was mostly Sinead that was had the input on that. It was like, let's do topical things. So the Michael accent changed then at the start. It was like, so I was down there in the nightclub the other night. And then it kind of became a more kind of, I was down there. So a bit kind of squeakier and a bit louder. And now if you listen to it, it's kind of just me just shouting more.
Yeah.
There's not really the accent. The accent kind of has developed just kind of more into me.
Yeah, the initial, so Farmer Michael and before Farmer Martin, it would have been
very
geographical.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
this guy is, this is,
but I remember when people, but I still like mispronounce words and I still make sure that I mispronounce words and I still make sure that it's kind of, because I remember a lot of people saying to us, your videos had spread further if you spoke a bit more clearly. So then I decided when we were doing the next few videos with Sinead that I'm going to mispronounce words and make it harder for him to be understood. Because Michael, you have to listen, you can't just watch one Michael video and go, oh, I get what he's doing. You have to watch a few to grow to kind of know. It's like you can't watch series 7 of a, or show 7 of a series 2 of something. You have to kind of watch a few of them to kind of get what we're doing and get what we're doing. But we want to add subtitles to the videos because people keep asking for that. And I'm kind of like, just learn the character. Well, yeah, you know, you'd never lose the accent and start speaking more clearly just to win over more viewers.
Would you not be? That's my act. I have to talk like a school teacher, for God's sake.
But you know what I mean? For the sketches. You know what I mean? For the sketches. Because you wouldn't see Sacha Baron Cohen like dumbing down the use of Ali G's words. Like, I would still use words that make no sense to people outside of Ireland or even outside of Galway.
I was thinking it'd be a double-edged sword, because if you put subtitles into that, someone would message you and say, you've spelled that wrong in your subtitles.
Yeah. And
like, it's not a real word.
But people love using the YouTube subtitles.
Yeah.
And quoting them. Look how wrong this got. So it's almost its own little
discussion.
And people go, what did he say at 1:53? And all other people chime in. So you get loads of comments then on YouTube from it. So it's kind of, it has its own
merits.
Yeah.
It's not too bad. Do you have a preference over recording VLive?
Because,
I mean, a lot of the stuff, I mean, we talked about this before.
It's so different, I suppose.
I know, we talked a bit before about you recording stuff and you try and do as much in one take as you can because that's the feeling of the piece.
Yeah, because when you have to redo it or forget a bit, after I do a sketch, and especially if it's a loud, angry Michael one, like, I have to open the door. I feel faint. I start to see stars during it and my heart starts to beat. And I have to, like, sit down for about 5 minutes till we do it again. Because it takes so much out of you to put that energy into the sketches. People don't realise, like, and I lose my voice and everything. And it just takes so much out of me, like, physically. Just to roar like that and be that animated for, like, 90 seconds. Like, it's like you're fighting.
And yet, and yet that is how actual people exist and behave. And
for 24 hours.
Yeah.
I don't know where they get the energy and don't die of a heart attack.
Yeah.
But, like, I think I prefer doing the sketches, but they're a different world. Like, I think I prefer them because there's less stress and less pressure. Well, there is pressure in its own way about reach and views. And obviously, if a video goes up and you only get 25,000 views in it, you're kind of like, oh, fuck, that was shit.
But let's move on. I have terrible news for you, because approximately 60 people listen to my podcast, so
yeah, but
don't let that hurt your feelings.
Yeah, but I was only getting 600 views at the start.
Yeah,
until it fucking just kind of built up. But I was lucky enough that it built up mega fucking fast from then, and then it went from like 600-700 to 10,000, and then it was up to like 20,000 for a year or so. And now we get like our largest viewed video would be Fuck the Mayweathers, which is probably between our videos, between us putting it up and Lad Bible putting it up and Oz Lad Bible and all that, I'd say it's at about 40 million now. But the single greatest one we've had was The Beast of the East. We got like 6 million. And that was on my page. But then the single video that went up on, I think, Lad Bible as well, was the Metallica, the Tamalataka one,
mm-hmm.
which I didn't even like. I don't even like doing it live. I don't like doing it because it makes Michael look really, really thick and surprised, which Michael is not.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? If you get me.
Michael's so sure in himself.
Yeah, that he wouldn't be that. Michael would hate a band like Metallica. Yeah. I thought they might rock or shit. You know what I mean? So kind of, I don't like doing that. But that got like 11 million views or something like that. So that was kind of like, and then, you know, as I was saying, you do a video a week or two later or a day or two later and you get 25,000. You're like, ah! You know what I mean?
But the weird thing is your videos are the material that you're generating which then gets people interested to come see you live. So it's, you need one with it. You can't have one without the other.
If you
never toured again and you continued, people would get bored of the aspect that they didn't get to see.
Oh yeah, you always have to have fresh ones and you always have to input them. Because when we started, we didn't do any of the videos. We didn't reenact any of the sketches, but people started shouting them up. Do this one, do that one, do this one. This was constant. So we said, like, we have to reenact some of them on stage. We have to.
But
like, they love them. Like, even when Sinead goes, and you're a big fan of the Paralympics, Michael, and people go, like, they're ready for it.
Yeah.
They're ready for me to say Oscar Pistorius and go on the rant about that, because they just know it and they like it. So,
but I think the whole point of the show as it exists now is to provide the sketches they know before they ask for them.
Yeah.
Because that interrupts the show then.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely, yeah. And build
the show flows, which is Sinead's job to steer.
Yeah, yeah. And build on the sketches and add a bit more into it, because the sketches are never the same as the video. Like, they're
I think
basic concept, but
the show I think is good as well, because the show, in the context of like my stand up, the material's all there, but it's never in the order.
Yeah, 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 yeah. And people
whatever we're bouncing to.
Yeah, people have constantly come to our shows and goes, that, like, even in Glasgow, seeing all the comments, that was even better than the last one. And we're like, it was kind of the same show though, wasn't it? You know what I mean? But every show is different. Every show will be different, because something will pop up. Like,
yeah, and the show constantly gets added to and taken away from you. Yeah. Right here, that bit's now a year old, so we don't need to do nobody's going to remember
this
story.
This bit that I just came up with, fucking off the cuff, that's staying.
Yeah.
We have to do that bit again. You know what I mean? That's a concrete one. That's in now.
Yeah,
you
this
know?
Works. Put it on the list. Yeah.
But that's what every show, that's what every stand-up like.
Yeah.
Most of your stuff is trial and error, and you just come out with it. Like, obviously, you'll try the whole three times rule, try it three times and then dump it, whatever. But, like, most of the stuff you come up with just randomly while you're out there, and you're like, that has to stay in.
It always hurts my feelings as a comedian when I specifically write something and it does okay, and then I say something off the cuff and it works, and I'm like, well, I'm glad I sat down to write there.
Because I just
add something in and it does really well, and then I've actually sat and
but there's something very magical about, I haven't prepared this at all, I just threw it out there and it got a massive, like, even a round of applause, and there's something like very, I didn't have to work at that, you know, I didn't have to sit down and think
that's
about
nice,
that
that's nice, but then you do the bit you've really
tried on
in.
I'm like, See, we kind of, I suppose we have the luck of just fucking flying off the cuff, and we've always the videos to fall back on, and it's pre-written because we've already done the sketch, so we've already put the envelope sketches, as we call them. Like when we're doing a video, there'll be 3 points we have to hit, and then we'll just take it from there. We kind of, that's it. Because people ask, like, what's the whole process like, and that's what it is. Something happens, blah, 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 Donald Trump said something, okay. And then we think about it for a minute and maybe add in something about, and then, like, in a bad way, then you're sitting at home later that night and go, why didn't I say that? You know what I mean? I WhatsApp Sinead, why didn't I say, fuck, you know what I mean? It's so obvious, glaringly obvious. Or someone will even write it under the video going, you should have mentioned that.
But it'll be in the next live
absolutely.
So it doesn't matter, you're all
so it's kind of, we're very socialistic when it comes to our comedy, and we'll take on board things. Like, even like when we're looking for a venue, I'll throw up on Twitter, we'd love to come to blah, blah, blah. And the amount of help you get, and the amount of, like, people that start messaging and go, this is a venue, here's his number, they'd love to have you, blah, blah, blah. So, like, Twitter is very brilliant in that regard. They're like, our fans are so helpful getting us, basically getting the venues for us.
Yeah.
So we're always asking, like, what would you like to see us do? And you have to kind of interact. Well, everyone interacts, but you have to allow them to have a say in what you're doing as well. Which they find empowering as well, like, as you could imagine someone that's like, that's my line, he threw it in, you know what I mean? And we get a lot of sketch ideas as well, but a lot of them are, like, if you were to do them, they'd be 5 minutes long, and it's a bit,
yeah,
you know, I wouldn't give that much control away. I'd say a sentence that someone might suggest, you know what I mean? But I'd never allow someone to write for me for a sketch.
You can't have somebody writing for you, and you also can't take credit for someone else's real work.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
As opposed to, oh, thanks for that wee bit.
Yeah,
I
just
keep that
like
for
give...
next time I'm in your town.
Yeah, yeah. I wouldn't like to give that power away, though. You know what I mean? Me and Sinead are going to write them, and that's it. Sinead comes up with some cracking closers, though. I might be a bit more in control of what we do, and because I'll say to Sinead, and then you say blah, blah, blah. So I kind of write for her, but then she will come up with some crackers now and again. That, like,
no, that's what I know. Is the character of Kathleen is much braver on stage. She hits so many better beats or something.
Yeah,
it's
yeah,
like,
yeah, yeah.
And even the bit, because obviously, as you said, it got to the context where people were maybe feeling a bit sorry for Kathleen.
Yeah.
There's a few times in the show Kathleen gets her, she gets a boot in.
Oh yeah, oh yeah.
She's fit for Michael. It's like the character tolerates him.
And our crowd are very split, sex-wise.
Yeah.
So, obviously the lads like me, you know, International Women's Day is a scam, get back in the kitchen, blah, ha ha, that's funny. And then when Kathleen gets the boot in as well, the women are like, go on, Kathleen. You know,
give it back.
It's a whole battle of the sexes going on in front of your eyes with a bit of comedy drawn in for a good measure. You know what I mean? So
yeah, well, we have the shows. So tonight is the big comedy festival, which is gonna be, which you've done before.
Yeah.
So you're now at
twice, I think.
You're now at a point where you're.
Oh no, we done a double show last year and sold it both out. So
yeah, so you're now at the point now where you're returning to venues.
Yeah, yeah. So and they see something in us.
Yes, yeah, and then next weekend, the weekend coming is a return to Manchester.
Manchester, yeah, for another two. So that's our. I think it's our second time. Third time? No, third time, I think. Yeah, because we done Manchester the first time we came over to Liverpool. And the first time we came over to Liverpool, we done 5 St. George's Halls back to back and sold them out. And I nearly fainted in fright.
Yeah.
Like, it was like, what the fuck? Like, and then the worry starts to set in. You know, are we good enough? Everyone in Ireland saying, nah, it's not great. You know what I mean? And you were being denied places in comedy festivals. And then you go over and, I wouldn't say blew them out of the water, but done a good show and they all loved it.
Yeah. And in context of as well,
it kind of reassured me as an act and as a comedian that, all right, we're doing something right.
We are comedians from Ireland where sort of the consensus is that everybody can be funny in some way.
Yeah.
But we can also be probably, and something I maybe didn't see and was definitely guilty of myself until I maybe moved away for a few years, we're very begrudging people.
Oh my God, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. 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 Yeah.
Like, I'm on this tour and some,
I get more hate in my own city than I do in any other place.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And it's kind of like,
that's why I think next year's going to be interesting, because you're doing Galway.
Yeah.
Because we talked before and you're like, I don't know about doing Galway.
Yeah.
And now you're like, we're just going to have a go.
Yeah. Yeah. That's MPI again for us.
Yeah.
You're doing the town hall. You know what I mean?
Like, oh, I don't. Do we have to?
Do we have to? Yeah, yeah. But they're selling well, and like, obviously we're hoping for it to be sold out. So obviously that's the goal with every show you do. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But you're kind of thinking, then you're thinking of the wider scale of things. So like, everyone used to be saying, you need to get on RT, you need to, and I was like, nah man, you need to get on England and get on BBC or Channel 4 or Channel 5, whatever, you know. It's so things kind of graduate and things develop and things evolve and your goals evolve. And you kind of, even though I'm a home bird, like, I wouldn't like to move away. My dad is sick and I have a brother with special needs and looking after my own brother, as you know, and trying to keep him on the straight and narrow. So, you know, I want to be there. I'm always worried about my dad now, even being here. But my brother, has he had an epileptic fit? Has my dad fallen? You know, he has Parkinson's. So you're always kind of worried about that thing. And I don't think I could move away from them. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, see, this is all real life that people don't see, stringing back to the thing where.
Oh, yeah. I'm just that twat in the car.
Yeah.
I don't have a life. I don't have a background. I don't have a history. I'm just your man. And they judge me on the merits of the character.
Yeah,
because the fellow that chokes in the car.
Because I wanted to ask about that, because one of the other aspects of the things you did were, we talked about you saying, if you have a platform, you should probably use it.
Yeah.
Do you ever feel, you've said to me, like, you've lost followers and stuff. When you speak about real life issues, you freak people out a bit sometimes.
Oh yeah, I do, yeah.
Yeah.
But
you're like, is it a responsibility or is it a want? Because you share a lot of stuff about mental health.
Yeah.
You had a rap record out last year, which was, yeah, about mental health as well.
That went to number one. I nearly shat myself.
Yeah.
Beat Lady Gaga for 13 minutes. That was incredible. No, because we were sitting in the car. We looked it up and go, how do you check the like charts? And then we looked it up and it was like top 100 selling new releases in Ireland iTunes chart. And we were like number 2. And then Conor McMurrow, who produced it, messaged me and he goes, you're fucking number 1. We were like, I'd done this in my room. And even listening to the track, you can hear me struggling to breathe, because it was the time I had a big massive panic attack in Dublin and I couldn't leave my house for about 3 weeks because I was starting to form agoraphobic. I couldn't even going out to the bathroom made me panicky. So I was like, I can't do the videos, I'm going to have to do some music. So I done it. So this lad, that, you know, I met it in my room with nothing, and we beat Lady Gaga for a few minutes with a major film and a major recording studio and movie studio behind them, and we bypassed them to number one.
From making the song, and as you said, it was like, the other thing is as well, you donated the money from that.
Yeah.
Did you decide that when you made, well, obviously because the song has a message? Like, it's weird as well because sometimes Michael has a message, but
yeah,
obviously if you feel they're not getting it, then Steve-O has the message.
Yeah, well, I decided straight away like that when I was recording it like that. Like, I even remember listening to the instrumental and I was there, this is the most depressing stuff I've probably ever put. And then I started writing the lyrics, like, even the razor blades that graze them left them unfazed, the thoughts that strayed, suicide notes left unmailed, the misery always prevails, and every ailment and aid, another reason to stay afraid. So I was like, I remember, like, sometimes I look through the lyrics now because I have them, like, they're stored in a note, and I'm like, geez, that's quite good, like, you know what I mean? Maybe I need to be more mentally unhealthy and mentally struggling to come up with better shit. You know, I often, like, I remember when the doc changed my meds, and I was like, will this affect me mentally in any way? Will I still be able to do what I do? Because that's what I didn't want to lose. I'd rather be suicidal and depressed and anxious and suffer from panic disorder than lose what I have as well at the other time, yeah, at the other side. So that's that kind of thing. Like, so yeah, I like a lot of the stuff I put up on Facebook does scare people because I don't believe in coming at the mental health thing in a kind of, oh, help your friend, give him a ring. If I curse in the sentence, like, I fucking tried to kill myself. People are out there trying to fucking kill themselves. Be fucking brutally honest about it. Put the message across in a way that people will understand, in a way that, because people in that situation, and when I was in that situation, when I was a teenager, when I was in my early 20s, I wouldn't listen to Westlife going, look after your mental health. I wanted it real and raw. I wanted someone that maybe came at it at an angle that fucking went, oh, that hit me. That's real. You know, that's real. He's cursing. He's not bullshitting around the matter. He's fucking speaking from his heart and experience, I suppose. So that kind of, I hope, comes true in my things, whether I talk about disability or whatever. Like, people then say I'm a bit of a hypocrite then because the topics in the videos, and then, but that's because you're misinterpreting the message.
Yeah, well, that's the whole thing as well, because it's such a weird bounce around, because people maybe are unable, not that they're unable to, some people, I think, get confused sometimes, but whenever,
yeah,
Steve-O's on Instagram going, hey, thanks for following us, guys. And then the next thing up is, oh, here, Michael's got a new video. And then it's Michael. So that's, yeah, but that's people themselves.
But that was the big, like, kind of thing initially. Like, do I set up a Sir Steve-O page as myself and then have a Farmer Michael page? And then, yeah, I was like, why should I do that? Like, why should I make it that easy?
Yeah.
Just have everything on the one page. Yeah, because obviously I'll put up a picture of Kathleen on Instagram and go, Kathleen, you're blah, blah, blah. And then the next one is me maybe speaking about fucking suicide or something.
Yeah.
But the people that follow us get it, and like we have a hardcore following that go to all shows. Like, they go to 5 of the Liverpool shows back to back, and they like come up all the time, and it's kind of, they like what we do on stage, but even if we bombed and made a balls of it, they'd still hug us and love us as people. And that the, like, you can't pay that, like, you can, or you can't, money can't buy that, to be respected for my actual person, my personage, as opposed to the character I portray or what I do on stage.
You know, no, that's, I mean, people who understand, or,
yeah,
who,
because that's lost in Galway, and that's lost mostly in Ireland, because they don't see the person. Whereas over in the UK, they like us as people, and they like what we do behind the scenes. But they also kind of, they add a cherry on top is, oh, they do comedy too. So it's almost switched around. So it's almost like we started doing the comedy post talking about mental health.
Yeah.
So you know what I mean. So it's kind of, but the UK is always different. The UK, like. Like I was saying to you earlier, like, when we go to Liverpool and do shows in Liverpool, I actually feel like a celebrity. And people are messaging, going, come to our restaurant. We, like, there's a 100 quid bar tab there if you come get free tattoos. Come, like, I had a woman that wanted to do, like, yeah, teeth whitening and stuff for me and all this. And, like, come over and we'll do this for you and this for you and this for you. And it's like, they're throwing shit at you. Like, in Galway, you wouldn't even, like, I used to joke with Paul, you wouldn't even be invited to the opening of an anus at 3 o'clock in the morning outside Supermax in Air Square. And people would turn up at that, trust me.
Can I get brought on one of those tours? Because so far the best thing I've managed being on tour with you guys is I got my underwear got washed yesterday.
That's
in,
a good
in
thing,
the lovely guest house we're staying in Blackpool. So
yeah, but that's a good thing.
Do you know what, free stuff,
yeah, yeah,
all,
yeah,
the perks of the tour and comedian.
yeah
but it's yeah, we have those shows. I just think it's good as well, because I asked you this, and one of the reasons I want to interview you guys separately, and I want to finish on this, is where do you see it going? Where's next? Where do we go? What do you do?
Obviously, like, the goal would be a kind of a TV show,
mm-hmm,
or a sketch show. Obviously, that'd be the goal. Or even just for the time being, to, I'd love to get on a few, like, popular panel shows, because I think I'm good at that sort of thing. I'm good at, like, bouncing off people and rubbing off people, and I wouldn't do Michael. I'd just do it as me.
I know, but I was trying to think of how would you work it from. Is Michael better known than Steve? And this is the weird thing.
Well, over the UK, here it'd be probably Steve all better known.
Yeah,
you know what I mean, as myself.
But in Ireland, Michael's better known.
Yeah.
That is weird.
Yeah. It should be the other way around because I'm Irish and they know me and I'm there. You know what I mean?
I once read a great quote and it makes me think of how Stephen and Michael being different. It said, a ventriloquist is just a mentally ill person making money off it.
Yeah. Well, it's like, what's your man's name? Fat guy. He used to play a character that he was always drunk.
Michael, you can't say fat anymore.
Oh, sorry, an obese man.
Yeah. The large gent.
Oh, what's his name?
I'm buying you time while you figure this out. Like, come on.
Oh, I can't think of his name, but he said he started freaking himself out because he started becoming the character.
Ooh.
And living as the character. And he had to stop doing it for a while. It's just like it freaked him the hell out. Like. So one thing as well that we'd love to do, and I could see us doing, like, the success of Mrs. Brown's Boys. I don't watch it or anything, but it's just, I could see us doing a talk show where Michael is misrepresenting and ribbing the hell out of the guest.
Mrs. Burton.
Putting it straight. Yeah, exactly. In a modern kind of
you can context. Yeah, you can have a modern context of the interview show.
Yeah. I think that'd be good.
That's awesome. Okay. I think we should do... I want to do another podcast. We'll do one with everybody sitting in the room. But we've covered the live show and Kathleen with Sinead. We've covered the characterization of yourself. I think it'd be a good one to just sit down and we'll just have a comedy chat sometime.
Yeah.
You up for that?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Legend. That lovely legend mm-hmm, you heard was we've just been joined by...
Sorry.
Don't be apologizing. It's fine. You were on the last episode, so it's okay. So, Steve-O, thanks for chatting with me.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been a pleasure.
No problem. We'll get a listen back to this. And guys, if you like the podcast, share it with your mates and subscribe and like and all that crack. And we'll chat to you next time. This will be up on Spotify and Speaker and all those boombox, all those things that I, those wherever the app sends it to me.
Yeah.
So thanks for listening, guys. Steve-O, say goodbye.
Bye-bye. Thank you.